Okay, we're here today to talk about How to Lie with Statistics by Daryl Huff. I am Pierce Luck. This is Tatiana Broadwater and Leah Petty. First, today, we'll be talking about some quotes that we found interesting in the book. The first one is, "There are three kinds of lies, lies, damned lies, and statistics" by Disraeli. Okay, the second quote we're going to talk about is, "Round numbers are always false." And the third one will be,
"It ain't so much the things we don't know that get us in trouble, it's the things we do. The things we know that ain't so."
So we can start off with that one. So it ain't so much the things we know that get us in trouble. So this really falls into statistics because they always try to make things seem like they're better. They always try to make things appeal to you with the numbers. No one's going to show you a bad statistic if they want you to do the certain thing. So I think that's a great one, especially for a book like this.
Oh yeah, following in chapter one, they start to talk about Yale's men, and that if you went to Yale, that you were going to gain a certain profit, and the profit was really specific. Only because they were talking about a specific type of Yale person, like they were talking about the best of the best, to make it seem that if you went to Yale, you would gain the most money, you would have the best profit. So that falls into like sample selection. So they want you to. So I'm gonna like for sample selection, it's like I'm picking.
It's fine.
Okay, I forgot how sample selection works.
It's so, again, like you said, they choose the best of the best, and apparently sometimes it's supposed to be a random choice. Mm-hmm. Like, we grab how many random people, but no, they know exactly who they're choosing, and they know what they're capable of, which a lot of colleges do now. Like, if you get this degree, you're guaranteed to make this amount of money, which isn't true at all.
Yeah, following that, following with colleges, like they'll give you the best statistic possible. So they'll show like the graduation rate to the kid. They'll show the best of the best graduation rate, saying like 90-something% of people graduate from Yale, and that's not true. Just so like they can bring in kids to come. Okay.
Chapter two, they started off with talking about the average chosen person in the neighborhood. And the first number he said was they made 15,000, and then he went to 3,500, and then a different number. And then he went on, he's like, "I did lie, but I didn't lie, and I lied last year, but I didn't lie this year." So that was like the first one about how round numbers don't make sense or whatever.
But yeah, also in chapter two, they talked a lot about what mean actually means. Like, because as we know, as we learn statistics, that there are three definitions of mean, which can be like the mean as in the average amount of numbers, the mean as in
the median,
so the middle of our data set, or the mean as in the mode of what the mean as in the mode of what appears most. So it's kind of interesting because businesses might use this strategy, they do use this strategy a lot and trying to like persuade the consumers and buyers. So for instance, of a statistic isn't like, if their business isn't doing well, but they had a lot of good sales in like December or whatever, like they'll show only the statistics from the December month, just so they can say, "Oh, this is what we're doing, this is a great business, come with us." It's all about the marketing scheme, the marketing plan.
Go ahead. Well, I was going to tie into that on page 33, there's a cartoon about this,
mm-hmm.
and you see that the mode is now the average worker, like, and you see that there's something pointing to the average of a man that makes $5,700. So that's what companies are showing you, like, oh, on average, this is supposed to be the average man, but we know mode is actually the average.
Mm-hmm.
It's the most amount of people. This appeals to. The mode is supposed to be the average person. Their average person isn't making $5,700. They're making $2,000.
Yeah, $2,200, and the salary of the owners are $26,000. So it's like a really big difference. But you don't know that if you look at the, like, facts on the page 33.
Yeah, okay, so following into chapter 3, it kind of falls into that a little bit more. But an example from the book, they were talking about how consumers and marketing consumers and buyers, they would use the strategy a lot, and how they did a test. And an example from the book was when they did like a test, and the man flipped heads, will flip the coin 10 times, and 8 times were heads. So they tried to like use that as like their statistic or whatever. Mm-hmm. But they only showed the first 10 flips. They didn't show if they were to like flip more times that it would actually be like average 50%. They just showed that 80% statistic.
And we know from just having the class so many times that the bigger the trials are, the smaller the number is going to be. Like, of course, if you only do 10 trials, 80% is the number you're going to come up with. But if you try doing 100 or 1,000, and the number gets smaller and smaller. And I think that goes with, like, workers and buyers and consumers. Mm-hmm. Like, as the number of people that work is going to get bigger.
Yeah, like, even the first sentence when he was talking about the cavities, there was only 23% fewer. And he's just talking about inadequate sampling, and he was, like, lying about, like, how good the product is. The first quote, there are three kinds of lies, damn lies and statistics, goes to all three chapters, how chapter one was about selection, chapter two was about how average has 3 different meanings, and then chapter three was about inadequate sampling.
Yeah, following the back up on chapter one, on the selection of the interviewer, like, the interviewer will, like, he knows what type of answer he wants, he knows what type of numbers he wants to get from it, so he'll choose his sample size, his selection process, so he'll choose the type of people that he knows will give him those answers, those numbers.
It's the same thing with when you pick who the average man is, when you count out the mean. I feel like big companies such as like Walmart and things like that start to do that when they say like, oh, now the average worker makes this much. And now like their CEO is giving up, I don't know how much they say he's giving up, like $1 million. But what is the mean? Do you have only 1 million workers that are going to be making more money? No, you have millions of workers. So does it really matter that he cut his pay by $1 million? Does it really add into the mean, the people that fall into the mean? Or does it fall into people that fall into the average?
The whole time.
So now that we know about these, like, damn lies and statistics lies, we're very excited to read, like, the next chapter. So chapter 4, Much Ado About Practically Nothing. And especially chapter 5, where they talk about the G-Wiz graphs. We're very excited to see, like, how, like, people lie on graphs, because we find that very hard to do. So we're excited to see where these lies go, how far they go. Hi, and welcome to our podcast 2. We're still reading the book, How to Lie with Statistics. I'm here with Tatiana, and Pierce. Today we're going to talk about chapters 4, 5, 6, and 7. Pierce, would you like to start us off?
Sure. First, I have a quote on page 54. It says, whatever an intelligence test measures is not quite the same as what we usually mean by intelligence. I picked this quote out of the reading because first I just thought it was interesting because today in our world we take a lot of tests that's supposed to like gauge your intelligence or gauge how smart you are, but in reality there's so much many more factors that go along with it. And it was, the article was telling us about how creativity and like this, like our, all these tests are not, they don't test your creativity level or your art level or anything like that. Like, I could take a IQ test, but it's not going to gauge how creative I am and like with my drawings or how creative I am with my music.
Think SAT is great. The SATs are a great example of that. Especially because like at one point it was supposed to assess how prepared you are for college. So how is a test supposed to say how prepared you're going to be for college? Like that can fall under mental state, that can fall under a whole bunch of things. So now, like they found, like the test doesn't mean anything else for the industry. So I think they go a lot about money too. People wanting to, they turn things into an industry to get money for them, things that we think we need, things that we think we need to assess ourselves.
So chapter four, well, they gave us the example about Peter and Linda, and they took the IQ test, and Linda's was 3 points higher than Peter's, and they said that Linda was above average, and Peter was below average.
Yeah, and going off that, another quote from the paper says, IQ is a figure with a statistical error. I also thought that quote was interesting, because yes, they're testing your IQ level, but they can never be like too angry with it. Like they really never really know exactly how, I guess, intelligent you are from your IQ test. And from the example of Linda and Peter, Linda, she had a higher IQ, but from the average. But like again, like what really is average?
Yeah, and then they talk about normal numbers and how normal isn't 100, but it ranges from 90 to 110. So it was weird how they said, like, Peter's IQ was low, but below average, but he fell between the 90 and 110 category.
Yeah, and yeah, apparently he's below average, and Linda's average, well, above average, and but they're still in the 90 to 110 range, then isn't that all the same? Like, aren't these kids still, like, just will be the same amount of marks?
Yeah. Okay, so chapter 5 was about how people have issues interpreting graphs because of the scale or the numbers or the pictures behind the graph.
In the link that Mr. Miles provided for us, after reading it, it mostly shows scales, and like a lot of people will not even, when you're just a person just looking at a graph, how often do you actually look at the scale? You're looking at the numbers pretty much like on top of bar graphs, on top of line graphs. You're really not looking at the scale that it's on. So if you see this huge chunk, let's say a bar graph, you see this huge chunk and then you see a smaller chunk, and maybe they're off by 3, but you're gonna assume like, oh, this is far off, this is a huge difference. It's just things that people don't think about, and companies know that we're not thinking about that when we're looking at certain things.
Yeah, in chapter 5, the first example they gave was, well, they didn't give an example, but they introduced the page by talking about how Humpty Dumpty was like a mess of words, and saying like how he was like, how he really good words, but like in reality, and then talking about how reality, people aren't good with numbers. So they talked about how people have trouble really interpreting graphs, but so. Okay.
Go.
Okay. So again, the article talked about how people have trouble interpreting graphs. So all it was saying in the paragraph how sellers of companies would use this strategy. They wouldn't particularly alter the data, but they would just change what they showed the public. For example, in the book there was a horizontal graph. With horizontal type graph that showed very little bit of data, and like the bottom of the graph was very spacious. So what they did was they cut the bottom off to only show the important data. Also, they might companies might change the scale of a graph, so it would make it seem as though the difference was like much more dramatic than it actually would be.
I think that goes into a lot of advertising too, which we'll probably get to when we talk about chapter 7, how these companies do advertise a lot of graphs just so you can see, like visually see what they're talking about. They use it a lot in politics too, like during the campaign elections, like
yeah.
You watch CNN, you see a lot of graphs. Like you really don't know what those graphs are saying. Like now, like even with us, like being like a high man class, sometimes I don't even know what those graphs are saying.
Like what Leah was saying with politics, on page 65, the graph, they show like the months and how the government pays people over time, and like the graph goes up and down a lot,
And it shows a big different range of numbers, but you can tell that the scale is really off.
On page 62, is a quote that says, of course the eye doesn't understand what isn't there, and a small rise has become visually a big one.
Yeah.
This goes along with picture graphs, so you can never really tell the difference. For example, if, like, in the book, they had a picture of a pig, was it? Like a pig picture compared to, like, a bigger pig picture over, like, the population. I don't know what it was, but you could say population over, like, a certain amount of years, but looking at the picture, you would think it's a dramatic increase. You're looking at the picture, you would think it's a dramatic increase just because, like, the cow is so much bigger than the previous cow, but in reality, it could only have went up like a thousand or so.
Yeah, so pretty much what they're doing with graphs, again, is strictly lying to us or lying to whoever their target audience is. It's not necessarily a lie, it's just making themselves look better.
Yeah, it's like altering the truth.
Yeah.
And in a way, if you think about it, like, it's lying, I guess, but it's not a bad business decision. Like, they're talking about, like, should they stop what they're doing, which I don't think they should, because, I mean, it's for business.
Yeah.
So you're trying to make profit at the end of the day, so it's all about.
Sometimes, like, I guess you as a consumer or customer, you feel like I'm being lied to, but really you're not. You just got to sometimes take the time to sit down and look at it to say whether or not you are being lied to.
Okay. Now we're going to be talking about chapter 6, the one-dimensional picture. So, again, it follows up with chapter 5. About how graphs work, but this is more focused on pictorial graphs and picture graphs. And the whole big idea about it was how they're more eye-appealing. So we're really not worrying about the numbers, but you're really just worrying about how the picture looked at the time.
I was reading one of the quotes that said this is true also of its eye-appealing also, right? People have gotten it down to a science to say what our brains are drawn to.
Mm-hmm.
And we are definitely going to look at a picture before we look at a graph. It's less to look at. It's easier. We think it's easier to interpret, but not at all. But this is what, like, you'll see them, like you say in here, like, you'll see them in magazines and things like that, in newspapers, because it's easy for us to see, it's easier to read, rather than reading a whole article. Let me just show them a picture.
Mm-hmm. And then they show, like, the small version of the picture, and then they scale it to make it look bigger, and of course you're going to look at the bigger one. And it's basically the same thing, but they'll multiply it by, like, a scale, and then show you the bigger one, but you're not really getting the bigger thing.
Yeah. Also, they don't tell you what scale it's on at all.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you have no idea, and you're like, oh, this looks bigger. It could be bigger by 3, and it could be a huge picture compared to a smaller picture.
For example, in the book, in the passage, they were comparing the foreigner's money bag to the American's money. So they were saying how the American had twice as much money, but from the picture, they were talking about how the dimensions of the picture were twice as wide and twice as tall.
Mm-hmm.
So it looked to be so. And so what we're thinking is, oh, they actually had 4 times as much as revenue than the foreigners.
Yeah, like it says how the chart is an eye appealing, so they show you how the foreigner doesn't have 2 money bags on his hand, but the U.S., he has 2 bags, and he has a bag and a saw. And then, like, well, Pierce was talking about the cow and how much different they are. They went from 1860 to 1936.
Yeah, it says that the figure should, like, one figure was twice as tall as the other, and so would have had 8 times the ball for a week. So, like, that's what they're not showing you. Like, you just see a picture, and no one's going to sit there and measure a picture on a magazine.
Yeah.
We're not going to do that because, like, we want to think that they're telling the truth to us. But this compared to the graphs, I feel like this is more of a lie than the graphs are.
Mm-hmm.
Because graphs can be like, oh, I wasn't reading, I missed something. But this can really just be like, I had no idea what kind of scale this was. This looks bigger than that one. So this one's definitely more of a lie. I would feel more lied to if someone tried to use this picture graph on me compared to a regular graph.
Yeah, clearly the conflict in this would be that that the pictures are just a bad representation of what the data could really show. And I wanted to ask you guys if this is like a bad way to show information, or if it's like the country still be using it. Is it too deceiving to the public?
Well, you're talking about the last one. You said that you don't think they should stop because it's for business. But if, like, you're being lied to, even though, like, it's helping someone out, like, you really don't know what you're getting. You expect to get one thing because the picture shows you something, but then when you actually get the product, you can tell that it's smaller. And, I mean, of course the company's going to lie because they want more money. But then they think about that you're being lied to just so someone can make a bigger profit off of what they're selling you. It's kind of deceiving.
Okay, so now chapter 7, send me attention here. The first line is very, like, true, like extremely true. If you can't prove what you want to prove, demonstrate something else and pretend that they are the same thing. I feel like that's something that we do, like, even just to convince, like, mm-hmm. lies you tell whoever, like, just try to convince them. This chapter falls a lot into advertising, how companies or whatever advertise things. The first couple of pages talks about, like, a drug, like a medicine to cure a cold. They're saying, like, oh, it kills this amount of germs, but then it says, like, what germs cause a cold. Like, you're not telling us what germs cause a cold. This doesn't have to be the germ that you put in the test tube, but it killed it in a certain amount of time. And then they're like, and people won't think about that. And then you throw a picture of a doctor up next to it, how many people are actually going to think about it?
Mm-hmm.
Which, again, is extremely true. Like, even people knowing, like, oh, this isn't a real doctor, like, saying these things, or this isn't a real doctor in a picture, someone would be like, oh, okay, so. And then it goes into, like, at the time, like, when you're sick, you're not going to think about, like, what germ is this, who is this, like, who makes this, like, and that's true. Like, in the time of need, you're not thinking about it. So, yeah.
Okay, another example from the story was they start talking about the Negro polling, and how you start talking about the opportunities for Negroes and they were testing Negroes and white people and how it would benefit their.
Okay, so we all had to find a misleading graph, and the graph I found was on populations, and so this author named Jonathan Good, he was looking at a chart about where people live, and he didn't think that the chart looked right, so he figured out what scale he was using, so then he made his own chart according to, like, the correct scale that he should have used, and the numbers were off by, like, a lot. He didn't have as many bars as the other man had. Like, there were five categories, and he only found numbers for three of them because his scale was wrong for the last two. So, he was lying about how many people lived there so more people could come to that place. It didn't say where they lived, but it just said a population on where people lived and that were alive today.
So I also got mine from Forbes. But this one is almost telling people how to read a graph that is, like, misleading. So I guess they made one, like, how much money, I guess, companies on Facebook make. And so the numbers vary, but they go up and down. Again, the scale is pretty large. So, again, it's hard to read. To the naked eye, to the normal person reading this, you're not going to take the time to read the scales. It's very, like, spread out. It goes from, like, December 17th to January 10th, which are way different scales. So the article is pretty much telling us, like, what's wrong with this graph, why companies do this. So they say it's, like, the most, graphs are the most informative way to get out your data. But, again, now that we know that companies mislead their customers and consumers. This is pretty much what the article was talking about.
Okay, for my graph that I also found on Forbes, they were showing the medal count for the Summer Olympic Olympics. And what they did was show like pictures to show that the count number, but it's hard to really determine if they didn't have the number, the exact number beside it for how many medals each country won, you wouldn't really be able to correctly determine which country actually won the most. It's hard to really see which medal, how many medals is represented by the picture.
Okay, another question that we were given as a group is like, what is one of the advantages of pretty much strategized random samples, which are pretty much picking your so-called random samples. So especially for like, again, companies, you get the answer you want. When we talk about the Yale men, they picked out certain people that graduated from Yale to say how much money they got. They know exactly who they were surveying. They know, they already know these things before they even start their so-called random search. And then another question is like, what kind of average would you use to like measure, like compare your performance of a math class? It really depends on what you're trying to prove. Like, are you trying to prove that your students did well? Are you trying to prove that overall your students did do bad or things like that? Because when we get back to like who the average is, if you go back to chapter two. Who the average is, like when we're talking about people that work in whatever these big chain stores, the average is this middleman, but the mode is the most people. So that's whatever you want to prove. Are you, again, like, do you want to take your top 1%, like your top A's or your top F's? Or, like, that's what you would have to prove. So in a math class, I guess you would use, like, your average would probably be a C student based on how many kids are in your class and your overall class performance. Maybe you have A, B, and C, so it gets below a C, then your average kid would probably be a D. Like, your average kid isn't going to be an A unless you have a huge class, unless you're measuring like a huge number. So,
yeah. Or a very small number.
Or a very small number. You're right.
Okay, going off of that, another question we got as a group says, explain why advertisers often rely on small samples on a very small sample to substantiate their claims. So going off what Leah said, it's actually connected very well. Because advertisers want to do this so they can like persuade their buyers the best. For example, if the seller were to do like a survey, they would want the survey size to be very small so they can get the answers they want back. Basically, if they like surveyed small kids on like what type of candy they like, they would get back like a lot of kids would say, oh, they like candy. But if they like widen their scale or widen their sample size to like to now adults and elders, they might get different answers back that say they don't like candy. But that would just mess up their whole all their graphs and the numbers.
Can I go off of that? Like also, like they like to use locations, like. You're going to get like people who live in rural areas compared to city areas. You're going to get way different answers, like especially like what part of the world you're in, what part of the U.S. you're in. You're always going to get different answers, and they go to the place where they know they're going to get the answer that they want.
Mm-hmm. And then like on page 18, how it said they filter through layers. When they do graphs, they have to pick a certain amount of people they want to do, or what the topic of the graph will be, and they said like once they put it through like the statistics of the layers and everything, the decimals are different, so it makes it seem like the graphs are actually bigger than what they are. So the same thing about if you survey a kid asking candy, and then if you survey an adult about the candy, you'll get different numbers.
Okay, the next question we that group says, what does the author mean on page 45 when he says hardly anybody is graduating normal anyway? So when reading the passage, they began to talk about how Dr. Gazelle was doing a little study, and the study was about how it was like toddlers and infants were, if they stayed up at like a certain time and month, then they were considered to be normal or average. So if your kid stayed up before that X amount of month, then he would be advanced, and if you were to sit up later in the month, he would be perceived as being like normal or like retarded. And a parent, and the whole thing was, what exactly does average and normal actually mean? And then they compare that to flipping a coin. So when you flip a coin 100 times, you expect there to be a 50-50 chance of getting heads and tails. You expect it to be 50 heads, you expect it to be 50 tails. On every flip, that's what's expected, but that's not exactly normal. So like,
yeah.
So you really went, so the whole thing was, what exactly is normal and how did it go?
Like when we did the dice rolls in class with the like loaded and unloaded, like then you have to think about like with that going into a casino, like on a way bigger scale, like craps and things like that, what number is considered average or normal, what number occurs the most. When you do expect to get these on even scale, but you know there is a number that's gonna occur more than others, and like how do they guess that? Like casinos have this down to science too, like what they're not gonna lose money. Like
Hi, welcome back to our last podcast. I'm Leah.
I'm Pierce.
I'm Tatiana.
Today, again, we're reading How to Lie with Statistics by Daryl Hall. And we'll be focused on chapters 8, 9, and 10.
Okay.
Who wants to start us off today?
I will. So in chapter 8, post hoc rise again, they were talking a lot about like cause and effect. And In the story they gave, it was talking about how if you were a smoker, then that would affect your testing grades, and like all the evidence like made true, like it made sense, and it was a fair test or whatever. But they always talked about how the smoking affected the grades. But then they talked about how it could be the exact same thing going like the other way around. It's like, and then I had bad grades, so now I smoke. And it would just be like, and the evidence to support it would be the same. They were saying how it would make more sense for you to say that bad smoking affects bad grades. It would just like, it's better for like propagandists and people of that sort.
I just wanted to pull up this. Like, I don't know personally like any real world situations where like this is a problem, because again, people will believe what they are told. Smoking is a big one that people do like to promote, though. Like smoking affects everything now. We do know as a scientific fact it affects your health, cancer and things like that. But I've yet to hear like smoking affecting your brain. So that's interesting to hear, just off of this book. And I guess it can be vice versa. I think if you find the right group of people, you can still say, like, cause and effect. And then you can switch it around any kind of way you want to, especially if you're random people or people that you pick, like, back in chapter one, the sample size. And again, if you have a larger sample size, then you're going to have more people to go off of to support your hypothesis.
Yeah, and in this sample size, like, they did a question and answer. And he asked a question, and he only answered it. Well, he first started talking about women, and then he went into men, but he didn't answer the same about women and men. Like, the for men, he talked about percentages, and for women, he just gave a random number.
I think that's interesting, because I feel like as more variables come into a situation, like, the more accurate it seems, the more information that they have to support it gets smaller. So I think that is extremely interesting, especially when they break it down into male and female.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Also, in the chapter, they talked about chance and what that means. And they were talking about how in a survey that if you get one statistic and one survey and you try it again, that it won't be the same, even though that all your figures say it will. Okay, so now we're going to talk about chapter 9, how to statisticalate. First of all, this chapter was very, very confusing, but it was about graphs and misrepresentation through the graphs. They were saying in the story how if you had like a bigger, like if your family was bigger, then like the salary would be bigger, which isn't true. And how they were showing it is by like graphs, and what they would do is shade in the graph. It was like comparing the averages and means of like the different populations. But also, in the book, Okay, the book is a book by William Cope Brenton, and he was saying how the using the shading technique was like really horrible, and but like the Newsweek like used it a lot, even though it was like bad and it was known to be bad, but they would still use it because like the public liked it.
Yeah, that can go back into chapter 5, like do you what is graph. Like again, like if you don't know what scale the graph is on, things like that, and then what other chapter was that when they were talking about the picture graphs? Chapter 6, one dimensional picture. Again, like it's kind of hard to tell, and I think the shading technique is something that's kind of like it's extremely hard to read.
Mm-hmm.
Especially like if there's no numbers and then you look like, what is this representing? Like, I get it, it's shaded, but what does that represent? Like, when you said the chapter was confusing, I tried to look at a lot of the graphs to like understand more, and the one, the darkening shadow, I was like, what is this talking about?
And the graph with the girl's face, and they talked about bread and milk and the prices. And she looked, like in one picture, she looks really happy. And the other one, she looks angry. And I don't understand the difference.
Yeah, this chapter was extremely confusing to all of us.
Also in the chapter, they talked about decimals, the use of decimals and percentages. And they were doing the sleep study. So they were saying how if like the average like study came out to be that the average person got 8 hours of sleep, that wouldn't seem to be accurate. But if like the person were to say that, or if the study said that the person got like 7.498, then like then people will say like, oh, that's really accurate. Like they're spot on. Like that they know what they're doing. And it was like the same thing with percentages. And they also talked about how you should how companies misuse percentages. A quote from the book said, buy your Christmas presents now and save 100%. And like even though like that sounds really appealing to like the buyers, but in like all reality it's like it actually made no sense. They were saying how if I'm saving 100%, that means I don't have to pay. But that was like the whole misleading thing about it.
Yeah, when we started doing chi-squared and we started filling in the tables of expected versus observed, when we started doing the calculations, when we came up with decimals, I was like extremely confused because I didn't think a person could be a decimal.
Yeah.
And like in other math classes, if you're in like a situation, they always tell you to round to the nearest whole, like round up or round down, because a person can't be a half, but a person kind of has to be a half in math. So whole numbers are not that accurate, but again, like a lot of people do like to see whole numbers.
Yeah.
And companies and places will do that because people think it's more accurate. Percentages is like a whole different story because, like, especially like signs, like when you go to like the mall, you're like up to 50% off, and you're like, that's confusing.
Yeah.
So most of the things in here are only 20% off. Like nothing is 50% off. You might have one item that's 50% off. So you say like, oh, it's up to 50% off.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like the commercials that say like save this much percent, and I'm like, is that on the price or is that how much money like I make? Like the number, like I was going to spend on Christmas gifts. How are you saying I'm saving this amount of money when you don't know how much money I plan to spend? So, yeah.
Okay, the final chapter of a book was chapter 10, How to Talk Back to Statistics. And in this book, they kind of like changed their perspective of who they were talking to. Like before they were telling us about the deception, but now they're telling us like how to avoid it and what to look out for. So they were saying like how to, when you're like taking a survey, try to like look out for the biases and the conscious and the unconscious biases. So could you know that all the tester wants to do is like find a good story? So we're just saying look out for that, and they're saying look out for averages and what that means. And yeah,
I feel like certain situations you should search for that, especially like the job search. You should see like, oh, when I know like the average isn't really the average, but like the reason like people started making advertisements for companies is because they wanted it to be short and simple and to the point. And when you're driving down like a highway and you see like a billboard with a graph, you're not gonna like pull over to the side of the road like, let me read this. ah, yes, the scale isn't right. Shut up. it's hard in, like, everyday life to, like, try to point out these lies. I feel like in bigger situations, like buying houses or, like, neighborhood statistics, whatever, like, mm-hmm. you should look further into that, especially with jobs, like, with big companies, like.
Okay, and thank you for listening.